This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
SADC should not be used as reason for Zimbabweans to live in fear, to be bludgeoned. We've seen in the last few days military tanks rolling on the streets of Harare in a very clear case of intimidation of the citizens.
That's Idris Nasa, a senior researcher in Human Rights Watch's Africa Division, urging SADC leaders to look at the issues of human rights abuses by Zimbabwean authorities. Details coming up. Also, UN agencies say opening the Adri border crossing with Chad will allow humanitarian aid to flow to war-torn Sudan. And Tanzania has hosted what appears to be the largest ever Chinese military deployment to sub-Saharan Africa. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Zimbabwe is hosting the annual summit of the 60-nation Southern Africa Development Community, or SADC, on Saturday. In the run-up to the event, human rights organizations have urged SADC to look at the country's human rights situation, including the arrests of opponents that started in mid-June. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare.
Zimbabwe was the annual summit of the Southern African Development Community, or SADC, Saturday in Harare, drawing leaders from the 16-nation bloc. Crews have repaired most of the main roads for the first time in years and even built some new ones. But on the ground and in the air, the police and military have intensified their presence in the run-up to the event. Tinashe Chinopfukutwa of the Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says from mid-June until the present, there has been a wave of arrests of about 100 pro-democracy activists nationwide.
Those arrested have been subjected to prolonged detention and incarceration. And much more recently, we witnessed the arrests of four individuals at the Robert Gabriel Mugabe International Airport who were forced off a plane and detained incommunicado without access to their lawyers. And they were subjected to torture and other inhuman and degrading treatment.
The government-funded Zimbabwe Human Rights Commission said in a statement that it was investigating reports of activists' torture by security state agents. But Home Affairs Minister Kazembe Kazembe says the people were arrested for illegally protesting the long detention of activists arrested in June for reportedly holding an illegal meeting. He also says those detained planned to hold protests at the SADC venue.
It is clear that the organizers seek to provoke a heavy-handed response from government, which they assume would attract global attention. The attempts at rendering the country ungovernable would be met with befitting responses. Let those seeking to create an atmosphere of despondency among peace-loving citizens be warned that such antics will not be tolerated.
The rights organization Human Rights Watch has called on SADC leaders to look at the issues of human rights abuses by Zimbabwean authorities. Idris Nasa is a senior researcher in Human Rights Watch's Africa Division.
We are also saying that SADC leaders should speak out against this intensified crackdown on legitimate and peaceful activism. SADC should not be used as reason for Zimbabweans to live in fear, to be bludgeoned. We've seen in the last few days military tanks rolling on the streets of Harare in a very clear case of intimidation of the citizens.
During the summit, Zimbabwe will assume SADC's chairmanship for the first time since the 16-nation bloc became a development community in 1992. The SADC aims to alleviate poverty and promote economic growth, good governance, and peace and security in the region. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
United Nations aid agencies welcomed the opening of the Adri border crossing with Chad, which will allow humanitarian aid to flow to millions of people trapped in war-torn Sudan. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The decision by Sudan's armed forces to reopen the Adri border crossing comes as aid agencies race to save the lives of millions of people at risk of starvation and deadly disease outbreaks. The World Food Program calls Sudan the world's largest hunger crisis. The agency says the opening of the border crossing will enable aid to be delivered into Darfur, where intense fighting is occurring. Speaking from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, WFP Sudan spokesperson Lenny Kinsley says her agency plans to deliver aid to the Zamzam displaced persons camp near El Fasher, North Darfur's capital, where famine was declared 2 weeks ago.
WFP is immediately mobilizing vital food and nutrition supplies to be transported across the Adri corridor over the coming weeks. We need to see trucks moving across this border every single day to get a consistent flow of aid into the region and to urgently save lives.
Kinsley says nearly 6,000 metric tons of food and nutrition supplies for around 500,000 people are being loaded and will be ready to go as soon as the Sudan government gives the green light. She adds WFP also is scaling up assistance to 13 other areas on the brink of famine. And she says WFP aims to reach 8.4 million people by the end of the year. At the same time, the World Health Organization is embracing the opening of the Adri crossing. WHO spokesperson Dr. Margaret Harris says millions of Sudanese have lacked access to health care, food, and other basic relief for months because of insecurity. She says people who are malnourished or starving are at risk of serious health consequences.
Anything that's a mild infection in somebody with good nutrition, a good immune system, becomes a catastrophic illness in somebody who's malnourished, particularly a child. And they can die very, very quickly from what might be a minor infection if they are malnourished.
The decision by the Sudanese government to open the Adri crossing followed the start of U.S.-sponsored peace talks in Geneva. While diplomats have said little publicly about how the talks are progressing, on Thursday, Tom Perriello, the U.S. Special Envoy on Sudan, also welcomed the opening of the Adri crossing. A delegation from the Paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, or RSF, is present in Geneva. The head of the Sudanese Armed Forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, so far has not sent a delegation. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tanzania hosted what appears to be the largest ever Chinese military deployment to sub-Saharan Africa for Exercise Peace Unity 2024. The joint exercise, which also included Mozambique, focused on counter-terrorism operations. David DeRoche, an associate professor at the U.S. National Defense University, discussed the Chinese military advance in Africa with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi.
China has long had a military presence in Africa, but it's usually been in the forms of weapons and occasionally advisors. They also have a number of security guards that are probably military forces under another name. And of course, they have huge commercial interests and build a lot of infrastructure in places like Tanzania. So it's to be expected that they'll do this. Of course, there's also the background of this where they're trying to expand their presence in the Indian Ocean, which China is absolutely dependent on for their imports of energy and raw materials. So I think this is something to be expected. I don't think that it's something that people will welcome necessarily in the West, but I don't think anybody is surprised by it.
Senior Colonel Zhang Xiaogang, spokesperson for the Chinese Military National Defense, said the exercise was carried out on land and at sea and aims to enhance the participating troops' capabilities in joint counterterrorism operations and deepen military mutual trust and practical cooperation. Does that mean China is replacing the U.S. and France in their counterterrorism efforts in Africa?
A good question. So the U.S. and France have never been we've never really been partners of either of these countries. They emerged into independence as partners with China and with Soviet Union to a lesser extent. Mozambique, for example, tried to use the Wagner Group, the Russian mercenary, to deal with an ISIS threat in Cabo Delgado in 2019, and the Wagner forces were defeated. So it's more of a continuation of a very long, patient, and multi-spectrum commercial, cultural, weapons sales, and training presence that we're seeing there. And I think it's something that will be of concern to the U.S., but not of driving concern. Permanent basing would be a bigger issue.
Sea drills included port defense, counterterrorism tactics, search and seizure, anti-piracy, and joint maritime patrols. Commander of the Tanzanian Navy, Amir Ramadan Hassan, said, "We anticipate that these exercises will strengthen our military capabilities and foster closer ties with the Chinese People's Liberation Army." Your take on the expanded cooperation with China?
In the naval realm, what you had was big Chinese ship, cruisers, a landing dock ship, engaging in things like exercises at sea. And the Tanzanian contribution was patrol boats. So there is a sort of asymmetry there. What Tanzania needs, and what I think every country, every seafaring country, to include the United States and China, would welcome, is Tanzania having the ability to defend its ports and defend its sea lanes. That's something that they do with their patrol vessels. The Chinese presence, on the other hand, was a conventional warfare capability that's of limited utility towards Tanzanian defense requirements, but probably, you know, made for an interesting event. And of course, it allowed China to project naval power far away from its traditional basis. So that, I think, the benefits accrued asymmetrically, overwhelmingly towards China, and the benefits towards Tanzania were probably marginal.
So the United States shouldn't be worried about this Chinese push militarily in Africa?
We should always be concerned about it, but the Chinese have been in Africa for a long time, and other people have been there as well. The North Koreans trained a unit of the Zimbabwean army that decades ago carried out a genocidal campaign in Matabele land. It's not so much that Africa is a theater of competition between the United States and the Soviet Union as it was then, and you know, China. It's more that the West has a very, very limited footprint in Africa and very limited attention span for Africa. We haven't really put the level of investment of time, personnel, and money into sub-Saharan Africa that China has. And so China is getting some benefits, some security benefits or prestige benefits from their decades-long investment. And I think it's something that we've always had a problem with.
That was David DeRoche, an associate professor at the U.S. National Defense University in Washington, speaking with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. And for more information on these and other stories from the continent, please see voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. For world news, check out voanews.com. Two reports released this week sound the alarm about an increase in efforts to disrupt the U.S. presidential election. They say information manipulation, political violence, and intimidation are on the rise. VOA's Veronica Balderas Iglesias reports.
U.S. voters are increasingly being targeted by domestic actors who spread false information ahead of the 2024 presidential election. That's according to an election vulnerabilities report by the human rights group Freedom House. Kian Vestinson is the organization's senior research analyst. He spoke via Skype.
People here in the United States who are percolating conspiracy theories and misleading information about politics. Some 70% of Republicans and Republican-leading voters have been captured by the conspiracy theory that the results of the 2020 presidential election were illegitimate. Now, ahead of 2024, we've seen that narrative already emerging and dominant.
There's also a rise in online intimidation and harassment of election officials, as well as political violence, the researcher notes.
We've seen political candidates experiencing direct attacks, including, of course, the assassination attempt against former President Trump. Hate speech and hate crimes against marginalized groups are on the rise.
While the voting infrastructure itself remains protected, cyber attacks are a source of concern, Westinson says.
The most vulnerable targets are campaigns and websites that provide people with information about the voting itself.
The FBI is currently investigating alleged Iranian hacking attempts against the Trump and Biden-Harris campaigns. A second report from the cybersecurity company Recorded Future finds an increase in malign influence operations by Iran, Russia, and China. They include the use of artificial intelligence to develop inauthentic articles that are then posted on fake news websites that look like mainstream media. Team lead, Sean Miner via Skype.
To introduce bias within the content that is has a political slant or a political leaning in a specific direction based on the corresponding government's geopolitical objectives and how those geopolitical objectives correspond to their best interests with which candidate ends up winning the election.
How effective are those efforts?
At this point, we have no hard data to suggest that these operations have historically actually impacted the results of the election.
U.S. voters are nonetheless encouraged to remain vigilant and wary of grammatical or spelling mistakes found in the articles and website domains they come across, which could give away the impersonation attempt. Veronica Valderas Iglesias, VOA News, Washington.
Yali, 2024 Mandela Washington Fellow Nachizo Sikombe thinks every Zambian citizen deserves health insurance as a way to provide universal health coverage. Speaking with VOA's Brian Itava, Sikombe says her organization is creating awareness on the need to have health insurance, especially in Zambia's rural areas, through education while lobbying the government to subsidize the cost of health insurance. Here is the conversation between Brian Itava and Nachizo Sikombe.
We raise awareness about the health insurance, and I work at a central hospital, which is like a referral hospital, and everybody comes there. And what we're trying to do to ensure, as healthcare workers, to ensure that everybody gets access to health insurance, is that at the point of the first point of contact, the first level of contact with our patients, is to tell them about the health insurance. But that is always too late, because they are coming there and they need the insurance there, and it won't be active immediately. And so what we are doing is a strategy we're doing is working with the community health workers, because these are people that are based in communities, and they are the people that have the closest contact with the community. So raising sensitization is working with the community health workers, working with existing community structures, such as the local leaders, involving them, the counselors, the traditional leaders, the churches, religious leaders, having them to talk to their people about it as healthcare workers. Because usually as healthcare workers, when you go with a message in the community, sometimes the message is not accepted immediately. But if they hear it from somebody who's always with them in the community, we have seen that it is more effective. And the key is really working with community members, community leaders, community volunteers to sensitize other members of the community. That is more effective.
In Zambia, just like any other parts of Africa, you will find people that are really struggling, especially like from what you say, the main focus is in the rural areas, right? But you will find people in the rural areas that are more worried about putting food on their table. So somebody's not going to sit there and worry about health insurance when they're feeling all right. Yeah. So how would you talk to this person?
And government does recognize the challenges that those people face, that they also need to think of putting food on the table, and asking them to pay an extra amount for health insurance can usually be challenging. And so government has now launched a social protection plan. And for those that are incapable, that are not capable of working, or those that can't afford to contribute to the health insurance, government is able to cover up to pay their insurance for them. And then for those others that are capable of working, capable of doing something, but you know it's really like a trade-off for them. Like, is it food? Am I going to eat, or am I going to pay health insurance? The government is subsidizing the cost of their insurance.
That was Yali 2024 Mandela Washington Fellow Nachizo Sikombe speaking with VOA's Brian Itava at VOA headquarters in Washington. Ethiopian native Heman Bekele has been named Time Magazine's 2024 Kid of the Year. Born in Addis Ababa, he immigrated to the U.S. with his family when he was four. Some of his earliest memories were of laborers working in the blistering sun, usually with no protection for their skin. His accomplishment? Inventing a soap that could one day treat and even prevent multiple forms of skin cancer. Now 15, he had a conversation a little while ago with Aidan Girmau of VOA's Horn of Africa service. Here's some of his comments.
Yeah, I've always been really passionate about just finding solutions that aren't just really great from a science perspective, but are also accessible to as many people as possible. And for a disease like skin cancer, where cures already exist in the field, the only issue is that those cures aren't accessible to everyone.
It may take years before such a product comes to a market, but this summer, Heman is spending part of every weekday working in a lab at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health in Baltimore, near Washington, hoping to bring his dream to fruition.
Of course, there's a lot of work still left to get to that goal, but I hope that, like I was saying, by 2028, it'll turn into a nonprofit, and we'll have to see from there where it ends up.
A few years ago, he read about imiquimod, a drug that, among other uses, is approved to fight one form of skin cancer and has shown promise against several more. But Heman wondered if it could be made available more easily to people in the earlier stages of the disease. A bar of soap, he thought, might be just the delivery system for such a life-saving drug, not just because it was simple, but because it would be a lot more affordable than the $40,000 it typically costs for skin cancer treatment.
Well, I tried to come up with a solution that was not only great from a science perspective that could work, but then at the same time was also affordable and accessible.
It's that ambition, to say nothing of that selflessness, that has earned him recognition as Time Magazine's Kid of the Year for 2024. And time now for our sports roundup with Mokbila Baro, our analyst. Welcome to African News Tonight, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Hayes.
So let's start with the English Premier League starting back today, I guess. What are some of the football games that look forward we have to look forward in the coming, in the future?
Absolutely,
In the weekend.
Today, there's that Manchester United versus Fulham. United is one of the most popular teams on the continent, and I'm sure they're going to be excited to see how their season kicks off. You know, I got to give a shout-out to Liverpool. Our producers, team Liverpool will be going up against Ipswich Town tomorrow as well. That's a team that came up from the Championship, so it'll be interesting to see. And I would say last but not least, Chelsea versus Manchester City, which is a huge game. They played some amazing games last season.
And Real Madrid star, you know, Kylian Mbappe, mm-hmm. scored in his debut Super Cup match against Atlanta. Mm-hmm. What was the score and how do you think he will do this year?
Yeah, they ended up finishing 2-0. He's the first person since Jude Bellingham, the one who assisted him, to score in his debut match. I think this team is going to be a very difficult team to beat. They already have so many stars like Vinicius Jr., Rodrigo, Jude Bellingham, and the likes. And to add Mbappe is really showcasing their level.
And lastly, Mokbil, the Paralympics kick off on August 28th. What will coverage look like from your end?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, having done the podcast, Chasing Gold with Mike, we got a lot of really good positive interactions from everybody for the Olympics. I think it's only right we continue with the Paralympics as well. We have some countries, some African countries, such as Chad, Equatorial Guinea, Eswatini, and South Sudan, who will be making their Paralympics debut. It'll be kicking off August 28th. So we will be finding a way to incorporate it into our weekly segments.
Sports analyst Mokbili Baro, thank you for your input.
Thank you.
And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, David Van Dee, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.